course, because they asked me before everyone else showed up, I had to share it with the rest of the group. That's fine. I don't mind. No secrets. No secrets with me. All right. First and foremost, paper topics are due when? How are you going to send them to me? Do I have to get like a thesis statement or anything long and convoluted? Just the topic. I just want to know the gist. Can you change your topic? 100%. What do you have to do if you're going to change your topic? Send me an email. See? Real easy. Real easy. See, Riley, Matt, Samantha, Annabelle, Deshaun, Kevin, right? You're Kevin?
Yes.
Okay, very good. And I know you. You. All right. So, do the best you can. And again, if you need to change it, that's fine. Again, you have the luxury of talking about technology and political events and individual battles, individual leaders, stories. There's so much out there that you could pick for a topic. But the key is to find something that you can write about in 6 to 8 pages. And I say that only as a point of reference. Because what am I grading you on in terms of your paper? Is it page length?
It's word length.
Word count. Word count where?
Like 1,500, right?
Of what? The paper?
Yeah, not minus quotes, right?
And minus what also?
Introduction.
Introduction. Minus what also?
Works cited.
Works cited. Minus what also?
References.
Cover page. Conclusion. 1,500 to 2,000 words in the body. Because you're a small group. That's the biggest help that I can give you all. Wait, no, you're Jacob, right? Who are you?
I'm Joe.
You're Joe. You're Joe. All right.
I guess I need the bathroom real quick. I'm sorry.
That's a personal problem. Ta! Hey, when nature calls. I'd rather have you go than go in here. All right. So, papers, 1,500 to 2,000 words in the body. Make sure you do that. That's where ultimately students usually fail. That and late submissions. Make sure you read the paper section carefully. I don't grade it with a rubric. I grade it as it's literally like a project. I give you all the instructions that I'm looking for in your project, and you will lose points based on which ones you miss out on. But if you get most, if not all, and even if you're not a strong writer, you still can walk away with a B on this assignment. Because literally, the biggest penalty for grammar and spelling and bad writing is 15 points off. So if you do everything else right, except you're just not a strong writer, you still can get a B. Simultaneously, if you are a gifted writer and you don't follow directions, A's turn into F's real quick. Particularly when you look at where the penalties start snowballing when words are missing or submission is late. Finally, I think I mentioned it in the video, and I reminded the second class, but I didn't say it to the first. Is it locked? You can get extra points if you submit your paper early. 10 points if you get it in by the end of January. Like I said on the video, like 8 points, 7 or 8 points if you get it in by February, and 5 points if you get it in by March. My friend Busra got that last semester. So she got it in early, she got the extra credit. But be careful. I had one student, you're Josh, right?
Yes.
I had one student, it wasn't last year, it was 2 years ago, that was like, oh man, I'm going to get it in real quick because I want that 10 points. Fired off the worst honest to God paper I've ever seen in my life. And I used to teach middle school.
It literally was an open document, no double space, no cover page, no footnotes, nothing. Just typed and typed and typed and typed and typed. And when I opened it up, it was full of all red and green squigglies.
Which, needless to say, my hand got sore when I stopped tabulating after 40. But then I went in and I dug more. Oh, all he did was babble. He only gave me a body. He didn't include an inclusion. I mean, sorry, an introduction. He didn't include a conclusion. There were no footnotes. There was no cover page. And the points just kept going ding, 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 ding. It was so bad. Oh, yeah, also he was something like 700 words short. It was so bad that his grade ended up with like a 15. But he got those 10 extra points, so good on him. So just be mindful. If you want to get the extra points, it's possible. Are you Jacob?
Yeah.
All right. If you want to get the extra points, that's awesome. But make sure you check proflematic.com. You can get to the link inside Engage. Make sure you know where you're going to lose points and simply don't do it. Because I'm not kidding you. I'm pretty sure I said in the video, there's a couple of things that I put in on there, intentionally crafty, that requires you to do a little research to figure out how to avoid the penalty. They're not big penalties, but I do got a couple of tests. Because what do I tell students all semester long? Read the instructions. Read it closely. So don't be caught up with that. And by the way, last semester, 300s. Students had nothing wrong. There was a couple of minor things. They had a couple of wrong commas. I think there was one sentence that was passive. I didn't kill them because everything else was perfect. So they got 100. They were static. Be that person. Not the 12. All right. Are the books in? The books are in, right? I've asked you about that. Books are in the bookstore? Okay. That, again, extra credit. I just throw that out there. You get the All Quiet on the Western Front. Submit two chapters, just kind of like two or three pages. What it is you read, what's going on in the story. And again, I can add extra credit to that. Extra credit also snowballs. You have the ability to add significant points, so take advantage of that. Because some of this stuff is going to get hard. Just to warn you. All right. Bismarck. Alliance system. Brilliant. He literally controlled all of Europe. Germany had alliances with Russia, Austria, and Italy. And all of those defensive treaties basically said, only if France attacks or if Russia attacks will the treaty even come into effect. Because if it's anyone else, all of the signatories can say, nope, neutrality. You don't have to get involved. He also managed to negotiate with England. He tried actually getting England to join the Triple Alliance, but England was doing its splendid isolation thing. Didn't care what was going on the continent. It was more concerned with his global empire. But at the end of the day, this is the big one. Everyone still hated France. And this is going to sound crazy every time I say it. But I kid you not, throughout almost all of Western civilization, France was the arch villain. They were the bad guys. They were the ones who instigated almost every single major continental war. Everybody hated the French. So all Bismarck did, real politic, everyone hates him already. Let's not make them victims. All right. Questions? All right. Unfortunately, and this is something that you're not going to appreciate probably until you're 25, 30. Because I knew when I was your age, I'm going to live forever and I can do whatever I want because I'm cool. Well, unfortunately, the truth of the matter is your time on this earth is finite. You only have a limited amount of days to be on this earth. And eventually, the one thing that will happen to you all, I don't care how successful you get in life, how much money you have in the bank, how hot your wife is, what type of car you drive, doesn't matter. You're all going to end up in the same place, dead in a hole in the ground. When you die, you have no control over your stuff. Your stuff, even if you have a will, goes to the people who are still alive because you can't bring it with you. I tried. I keep telling my wife, bury me in my F-150. That would make me a happy camper. She's like, no, you idiot, I'm not paying for that. Like, please. But this system of Bismarck playing three-dimensional chess eventually began to crack because at the end of the day, he could control some events, but he couldn't control everything because nations are complicated. There's lots of events that occur inside countries. And unless you're inside, you really have no control of what's going on. And most of the times, even the government can't control what's going on. And that's essentially what happened. And Bismarck's brilliant system, which was working smoothly, effectively, began to crack. And it began when Austria started getting aggressive over the Balkans, in and around the same time that Russia wanted to get in as well. The new Tsar, Tsar Alexander III, had the same dream that all of the Russian Tsars had, which was what?
Warm
water port. They wanted to be able to take control of this land down here so they could establish warm water bases so they could engage in commerce with the rest of the world. Because again, by this point, the Suez Canal is open. So if Russian ships can get out of the Black Sea, they literally can sail across the globe. And what's the one commodity that Russia produced a lot of that just about everyone on Earth needed?
Oil.
No, not yet. Not yet. They would discover it, but not yet.
Grain.
Wheat. Food. In the Ukraine, they could produce enough food to feed everyone in Russia, as well as a good chunk of Europe. So, they needed to be able to get this stuff to markets, because what happens with grain if you leave it in on the dock for too long?
It expires.
It rots. Right? Bugs get into it. It gets gross. Moldy. So Russia had been dreaming of this because they knew they had a resource that people would buy, and if people are going to buy your stuff, you're going to make lots of money. That's what the Tsars wanted. So how did they do it? Well, they went back to the Treaty of Berlin that we talked about, the Berlin Conference. And Bulgaria, if you recall, under the Treaty of San Sebastiano, was allowed to become independent domestically, but they had to stay in the empire. But in Berlin, that was scrapped, and the size of Bulgaria was reduced. So the Russians came up with a brilliant idea. Let's pump up the Bulgarians to declare independence, because the Ottoman Empire is slowly getting weaker. So if they can declare independence and we can jump in and help them, they will allow us to use their ports. And we're this much closer to getting out of the strait. But, you cannot just declare it. So, Russia begins contacting Bulgaria in almost kind of in a bullying way, saying, like, do it. We got your back, do it. But they were so aggressive that the Bulgarians were angry. Because the Bulgarians are like, okay, we're controlled by the Ottomans. The last thing we want to do is become controlled by the Russians. So what did they go and do? The Bulgarians contacted the Austrians and kind of said, hey, look, if Russia starts a war, can you back us? To which the Austrians said, okay. In direct violation of the Three Emperors League. So, the Tsar, Alexander III, decides, I'm leaving. I'm out. I withdraw. Well, this terrified Bismarck. Terrified. Because again, under the terms of the Double Alliance, if Russia attacks Austria, what is Germany, under treaty, legally obligated to do? And what is the one thing they do not want to do? Exactly. So Bismarck begins freaking out. And he's like, okay, I need to, once again, regain control of the situation. And he does so in a brilliantly way. As he always does, he would establish a secret treaty, known literally as the Reinsurance Treaty. When you reassure someone, what do? To them?
You reassure them.
Yeah, but what does that mean? Yeah, exactly. And that's exactly what Bismarck does. He contacts Alexander III's government. He's like, look, hey, we've been getting along great. I get it that you hate the Austrians. Nobody likes the Austrians, but they're not as bad as the French. But How about we do this? He would draft another secret treaty, and essentially it stated the same terms as the Double Alliance. That if Russia goes to war with anybody other than Austria, Germany will pledge neutrality. They won't get involved. So if you're going to go attack the Turks, go have at it. We're not getting involved. But if Austria attacks Russia, or if France attacks Germany, then the other power will declare war on that enemy. For the first time, he made a second treaty specific to France. The first one was Italy. Now he's got Russia involved as well. So if France attacks Germany, Russia, Germany, and Italy are going to declare war on France. Hey, you think France is going to be that stupid?
Yes. Well, you think so? Guess what Bismarck does to make sure they're not that stupid? What has Bismarck done over and over again?
Threaten them?
No.
Isolate them?
No.
He leaks it.
He secretly leaks it. Somehow, this terms of the treaty, which was a secret treaty, ended up in France, in French. To which caused the French government, the New Republic, to freak out. Oh my God. If we do anything really stupid, we could have to go to war with Italy, Germany, and Russia? But for the Germans, you pulled them back in. And for the Russians, they now feel good. They feel good, because guess what Bismarck told the Tsar's government? I will not allow Austria ever to attack you. That is my pledge. And if they do, I will destroy them like I did in 1866. To which the Tsar said, "Boorah." So, crack happened, and Bismarck jumped in with the spackle, and he fixed it. And once again, he keeps his system. But the problem is time. This occurred in 1887. That's the year of the reinsurance treaty. But time was not on Bismarck's side. Questions?
No? Well, fortunately or unfortunately, wait, no. Go to animations, go to, no, slideshow, there we go. From current slide. Boom.
Unfortunately, he would lose control once again, less than a year later.
Because fate steps in. The first German Emperor, Wilhelm I, or William I in English, dies at the age of 90 years old. William started off as King of Prussia back in the 1850s. It was William who brought Bismarck in as Chancellor, and it was William who allowed Bismarck to completely control the Reich. And now, his good friend, and by all evidence, they were friends, now he was gone. The king is dead. What happens?
His son becomes the next Kaiser.
Succession. Of course, you got to have a son, right?
Yes.
By the way, that's the most, if any of you ever decide to become a king or a queen, most important thing you'll do is have a child. Because if you don't have a child, you'll lose your empire. All right. So fortunately, William did his kingly duty and had several sons. The second oldest, because the oldest died, was Frederick III. Now, Frederick III, in terms of King of Prussia, technically he was Frederick I of Germany, but there had been two previous Fredericks going back 600 years. When the Holy Roman Empire was there. So out of respect for those who came before, Frederick requested that he be referred to as the third. But he is now the second Kaiser of Germany. And he was a product of his times. He was raised, literally and figuratively. Oh, man, what are we doing? Stop. There we go.
He was a man of his times. He was a Prussian noble, and that class is referred to as a Junker. He went to the prestigious Prussian Military Academy. He was trained to be a war leader. And he led men into battle in the Franco-Prussian War.
But then an amazing thing happened. When he saw death and carnage, his politics changed.
Instead of wanting to be an absolute monarch, which essentially was the system that Bismarck created for the Kaiser, granted Bismarck controlled it, Frederick was a classical 19th century liberal. One of his favorite writers, ironically, was Thomas Jefferson. He was well-versed in the writings of our founding fathers, as well as the writings of the Enlightenment.
He believed that all people are entitled by God to have rights, and that the only legitimate existence for government is to protect those rights.
So even though he was trained to be a hardcore successor to his old man, when he came of age, he started having conversations with Bismarck, and he started saying, you know, look at what they did in England. England has a constitutional monarchy where they have elections, and the people get to vote, and they get to pick their leaders, and the king is nothing more than a figurehead. But most importantly, there is no chancellor. So Freddy Boy starts saying, hey, I kind of like this dig.
I like this shindig. I think this is what I want to do. Because wouldn't that be great? Wouldn't all our people just love me if we did this? What caused it? Death. He witnessed death with his own eyes. Any of you veteran? None of you are veterans? Any of you have relatives who are veterans? Combat veterans? They talk about war?
Not very often.
Why not?
Talk about it because it's too hard for him.
Yeah.
He lost a lot of friends in the war.
Yeah, it's just not fun. The old saying goes, is war is hell. It's not playtime. And there's no power-ups like in video games. If you hear a that's what bullets sound like bees, and you don't see them. And by the time you hear the toop, it's probably too late. It's already embedded in your chest. And there's a big cavity that blows up in the back of your chest, and you fall over dead. Well, they were firing, they didn't have smooth brass bullets like we have today. Yeah, they were still using the needle gun, but the needle gun had a paper cartridge that was basically an extension of the old musket rounds. So there was a percussion cap, then there was powder, and then there was a load, about 77 millimeters. So you'd get something solid lead this big, not flying at the necessarily as fast as can be, because you only put so much powder in it, and when it went into you, it basically spun, expanded, and went flat out the background. Not fun. That's the reason why so many people back then, they lost limbs if they got shot. Because there was no way to cure for them. Their bones would be completely shattered. So he saw this, and he realized, why did we fight that Franco-Prussian War? Yeah, it was great that we had this Germany created, but it was all a game. Started by Bismarck to get more power. And I don't want that power. I want the people that have rights. So, he sought to undo Bismarck's creation. And Bismarck was terrified. Except he had hope, being Bismarck. Literally, 3 days before William died, Frederick was diagnosed with throat cancer. He was a voracious smoker of cigars. He always had a cigar going. Almost every single waking hour. From the point when he was a teenager. And he loved it. Problem is, if you have that genetic disposition, you will get cancer. And throat cancer, back then, there was no such thing as chemotherapy. So you know what they had to do? They had to cut open your throat and take out the chunks of flesh inside that had the cancer cells in it. And of course, they didn't understand about sterilization. So when they cut his throat open, they gave the poor guy sepsis. Infection. He never issued a single decree in his entire 99-day reign. He was emperor. He got coronated, but he couldn't speak. He was emperor in name only. He spent the whole reign in his bed, except for coronation day. And even then, he had to be helped. I can tell you, when Freddie died, almost guaranteed, Bismarck did one of these. Oh, thank God. Why? Oh, there he is. There he's dead. He's dead. Why? Because Frederick also did his kingly duty, and he had a son. Actually, he had multiple kids, but his oldest kid was William II. But notice, he was 29 years old when he became Kaiser. He was born in 1863. Not that you need to remember this, but as a point of reference, in 1864, that's when Bismarck instigated the first war to slowly start building the empire. 1866 was the second one, and then 1871 was the third. At that point, Willie was 8. He had no concept of war. He had no concept of how Germany was created. All he knew is that when he became king, he was now emperor of one of the most powerful nations on Europe. And guess what he wanted to do? Flex his muscles. Why? He was handicapped. Any of you know what Erb's palsy is?
It's a paralyzation or something, or like your nerves don't work or something.
It is. Why? He was paralyzed, but why was he paralyzed? Do you know what the cause of Erb's palsy is?
I do not know.
Birth.
It's birth defect.
Birth defect. So when he was born, his arm was broken as a newborn, and you can't heal a broken newborn's arm. So as a result, it never fully developed. His left arm was withered. It literally was 6 inches shorter than his right. So he dreamed of going to the military academy like his father did, but he could not qualify. So you know what he had to do? He had to play war. And I don't know what you guys did, guys in particular, because I don't think girls played with soldiers and stuff when you were younger. But I had, back in the 80s, you know, the little 3-inch or 4-inch figures, little G.I. Joe guys. I love the G.I. Joe guys, the Kung Fu Grip, it's awesome. They battled against the Star Wars guys, and somehow G.I. Joe always won, because G.I. Joe is a real American hero. But I had little plastic toys. Guess what Willie had?
An army.
He actually had dedicated squadrons, which he could play war with. Yeah. He could command the soldiers. Now, no one ever shot anybody. No one ever, like, stabbed anyone with a bayonet. But there were reports that Willie would not let the men stop fighting until they suffered serious bruises, because he got off on it. That's the guy who becomes king. Well, he was highly educated. Bismarck had his own son, Bismarck's son, Herbert. Yeah, I'm pretty sure Bismarck's son was named Herbert. Train him, educate him. He was his tutor. And so by the time William was 20, he was well-versed in foreign policy. He fully understood the dynamics of Bismarck's alliance system, and he understood how Germany was created. But he wasn't interested in that stuff, because now he had the most powerful nation on the continent, and he wanted to use it. Because whereas Bismarck believed in real politic, a politic of realism, the new William believed in what's called Weltpolitik, world politic. He wanted to be able to take German soldiers, engage in new imperialism, conquer foreign lands, build colonies, and rival the most powerful empire on earth, the Brits. Do you know why? No, but there's a reason why Willie hated the Brits.
Does he just, the Brits weren't engaging?
Nope.
Sometimes down to the Empire?
His grandma was Queen Victoria. And when Queen Victoria died, when George came in, George was always insulting to Willie. And Willie hated him for it. So what better than to use the economy, the technological advancements, and the military strength of Germany to position Germany to be the most powerful empire on earth? He literally wanted to create a world in which everything circled around Germany. Questions? All right. So now the hard part is, and this is one of the major reasons why World War I happened, is you're not going to understand why the war happened unless you get to know what was going on in this guy's head. And let's just say even the most kind historians constantly use phrases such as this. Ultimately, that the reign was incoherent. It basically made no sense. So you can, bless you, you can plot the policy decisions of any leader. They're very rarely like this. Usually they're sequential, one step after the other, after the other. That's what Bismarck was doing. But again, Bismarck was doing it in three dimensions. This guy was all over the place. And as a result, the people in the world started getting very concerned because they realized he was impatient, that he was a bully because of his handicap, and ultimately, he felt. He didn't think. So you say something he doesn't like, he's going to throw a temper tantrum. And he's going to violently lash out at you. That's what he did to his soldiers. I don't know if he abused animals, though. So I won't go that far. But here's the weird thing. Because of this, he could not effectively control foreign policy. Because what he presented was a bipolar personality. I think that's the next click. Nope. I thought it should say bipolar, but I guess it's not on there. Incoherent reign, bipolar. So at home, he was a patriot. He talked about Deutschland, Deutschland über alles. Germany above all else. Germany is better than everything. And the people loved him, because who doesn't like a patriot? Hoorah, Deutschland! So Hitler came to power, playing nationalism. But to the world, a world that at this point was based on the complicated diplomatic skills of Bismarck, now you have a guy suddenly willing to play what's called brinkism. Like chicken. You know what the game of chicken is? Don't ever play chicken, particularly if it's a car, because you will lose. Cars will win almost every time. Not speaking from experience. Never dumb enough to do. I did many dumb things, but that was something I never did. So, in order to get whatever he wanted, he'd throw temper tantrums. He would threaten war. He would take Europe, the diplomatic scene, literally on the brink of total chaos and anarchy until he got some of what he wanted. He never got whatever he wanted, but he got some of it. And then you know what he did? Then he kind of backed things off and let everything cool down. Until the next time. So if you're a diplomat, if you're a world leader, and you see this guy as the head of the most powerful continental nation, you're scratching yourself saying, holy cow, we're one temper tantrum away from a total annihilation. And to make matters worse, he didn't like to be questioned. He wanted what are known as yes men. What's a yes man?
Someone who doesn't know how to say no.
Why?
Because they're afraid of the consequences if they say no.
Yep. Amen. Amen to that.
I've surrounded a lot of those.
Yep. Very, very, very annoying.
Because nothing gets done and everything's effed up and everyone wonders why.
Yep. Oh, but I thought that's the way you wanted it. Right? I thought that's the way you wanted it. Isn't that the way you wanted it? Oh.
Exactly. Then
No, that's not what I said. That's not what I said at all. Oh, sorry. Sorry, I'm trying to make money. Do my side hustle. Alright, let me see. See if I can get 160 for this one. Can I get 160? Come on, better, 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 swing. Oh, that's a lot of stuff. Yeah, give me 160. You'll give it to me. You're desperate. Alright. So, ironically, he made several mistakes. By the way, the biggest one was shortly after he came to power, he actually chased Bismarck off. Bismarck decided, I can't work with the kid, so he quit. And in the next 10 years, just 10 years, the Kaiser went through four chancellors. Now, by comparison, William I only had one, Bismarck, for over 25 years. So if you're constantly having a revolving door and the new guy realizes why the old guy was fired, the new guy's going to say less out of fear of getting fired because he wants the job until he gets fired and then the new guy comes in. And then eventually you're going to get the weakest candidate possible. And that's not good when you are playing Brinkism. And ultimately, while the Kaiser didn't start the war, there are many historians that point out he did four bad things that set the world on the path to war, thus almost making it unavoidable. Not 100% unavoidable, but almost. The first, he was a 19th century racist. Not like a modern racist. Booster, do you remember what a 19th century racist was? All right, don't want to get too far off topic. Don't want to get on tangent. But long story short, the racial attitude during this time period was based on cultural superiority. So a culture was what a race was. It wasn't skin color. We have the dumbed down version of race. So the Russians were a race. The Italians were a race. The French were a race. But so were all the different people in Africa. So were all the people on a global level. And at the end of the day, the Kaiser subscribed to the same racial beliefs of German racial superiority. And you know who was racially inferior? The Russians. Because guess what the metric of greatness was during this time period? Three-letter word.
War.
War. Who wins wars?
Russia.
Well, who wins wars? Great races. Strong races. And look at all the wars that Germany fought and won to make its empire. What about those nations that lose wars?
Inferior.
They're inferior races. So, Germany wins wars, Russia has a tendency to lose wars. So in the Kaiser's mind, I'm not going to keep this reinsurance treaty. Buy wheat from Russia, sell them our guns, that's stupid. Screw the Russians. They're inferior. They can't even beat their own people. They let their emperor get blown it up. So he allowed it to lapse. Which now meant Russia is adrift. At a time when in the middle of the continent is a bully. Now, I will be fair. This was actually part of a bigger strategy. And you don't have to remember the details. But at the time, England and Russia were fighting for control over the part of the world today where Iran is. Although then it was called Persia. So what the Kaiser believed was, if I kick the Russians to the curb and I insult them, maybe I can bring England in, because the enemy of my enemy is my friend. Unfortunately for Willie, George hated his cousin. So there would be no treaty between England and Germany. Mistake number two. Instead of four-dimensional, three-dimensional chess, the Kaiser uses 19th century racism and says, look how superior the Austrian Germans are. Look how superior the Hungarians are.
They beat down all of those ethnic minorities. And they have total control over the Czechs and the Slovaks and the Slovenes and the Ruthenians, yada, 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 yada. So they are superior. So that's who I want to have as my friend. And he basically told the Austrians, do whatever you want, even in the Balkans. Take Bosnia-Herzegovina. And if you do that, we'll get you back. To which the Austrian said, ooh. He also started instigating trouble with France when he publicly proclaimed the renewal of his agreement with Italy as being one of the greatest devices in the modern era. Germany and its allies literally control the center of the continent. And all of the other inferior nations circle around it. Well, now the problem is, the French are sitting back saying, huh? Wait, we haven't had a war with Germany in how long? And now suddenly the Kaiser is potentially implying that he'd be willing to go to war with Italy against us? Well, that's not so good. So it always comes back to the same basic metric. The enemy of my enemy
is my friend.
So the third mistake that the Kaiser did not stop was when France, fearful of German aggression, recognized that Russia was sputtering out of control, begins having envoys, communications with the Russians. And France essentially says, hey, look, you have a poor agrarian economy. So the French banks will invest in your country. And you have little to no factories. So French industrialists will transport technology and help you open up factories. And from 1894, they start getting closer and closer and closer. They begin selling weapons. France begins giving Russia weapons. They have naval exchanges. They begin wargaming together. And both began to agree that if it looks like war, before I do anything, I'll call you first. This became the basis for the Russo-French dual alliance. And the terms are very similar to what we talked about with the Triple Alliance. If France is attacked by either Germany or Italy, Russia will attack Germany. If Russia is attacked by Germany or Austria, France will attack Germany. This would be the basis of the dominoes that fell in 1914. Because when everything was spiraling out of control, guess what France said to Russia? Go get them, boys. I got your back. Now, here's the most important part. This was Bismarck's absolute nightmare. He never would have allowed this to happen. Because now, where's Germany in relation to France and Russia?
Right smack in the middle, and was going to fight a two-front war.
Yeah, and historically speaking, how many nations have successfully fought two-front wars?
Zero.
Yeah, like hardly any. But you know something? The Kaiser was too blind to see it. Because you know who loses more wars than the Russians?
The French.
The French. Well, as if that was not bad enough, the moment Germany gets word of the signing of the French and Russian dualist alliance, they begin a whole new degree of saber rattling. Saber rattling so significant that for the first time since the end of the Napoleonic Wars, England suddenly is awake in paying attention to what's going on the continent. It jars them out of their splendid isolationism. Because guess what the Kaiser begins talking about?
War.
No. Empire. Global empire. And who's the biggest global empire on Earth?
England.
Mm. And where's England's imperial territories?
All over the world.
All over the world. So what's going to happen to those when the Germans suddenly show up? Oh, yeah. What influenced this was a book. And I know none of you really probably read many books. No. But sometimes you read a book, and Sam, I don't want to scare you, but sometimes you read a book, it's like ideas in your head. You know, it's shocking. So the Kaiser read a book that became a bestseller in American military academies, written by Admiral Alfred Mahan. It was a little book that talked about the historical development of sea power from 1660 all the way up to 1783. And in Mahan's book, and by the way, this was the most important piece of naval strategy that was utilized by every single navy on Earth, including the American Navy. Because in it, Mahan argued sea power. It's not winning battles. It's sea power that determines if a nation is strong. Because if you can get your weapons anywhere on Earth, who can stop you?
The U.S. does today. That's why we invest so much money in our Navy. It's a projection of force and power.
Exactly. Exactly. When an American carrier fleet shows up anywhere on Earth, I'm sure the little Houthis and the little Iranians are sitting back saying, dude. But it would be more so if we had a better president. Yeah. So, what does the Kaiser start saying? Strong Navy. Let's build a Navy. Because you know what Prussia never had? A Navy. Because Prussia was always a land-based military power. It had armies. So, let's flex our muscles. Let's build naval ships. And let's get colonies. Now, this too was in direct opposition to Bismarck's policy. Bismarck encouraged merchant fleets to be built. He encouraged German companies to go into those foreign lands and to make business treaties with the native peoples, and to buy their goods and sell them German goods. Because what is the cost to the treasury if a company goes into a place where it's not wanted, as opposed to a military vessel?
Well, all that money's going to be lost. All those assets are going to be
Yeah, but whose money and whose assets?
Well, technically it's the government's. No.
It's the business.
Oh, business, yeah.
Yeah.
And then they're
so if the business goes away, what do you think the government's going to sit back and say? Well, we're not going to go there. So why don't you go over there? Bismarck's strategy is called commerce raiding. You let your businesses go out, and they carry the risk. Because if a country doesn't want to do business with a German corporation, the German corporation can simply go to another country. And eventually, they'll find someone who wants to do business with them. Zero cost in gold to the German government. Zero cost in blood to the German government. By the way, Bismarck also used economic treaties. He was magnificent with tariffs. You know, the kind of stuff that Trump did to China back when Trump was president. Because he realized it costs little to nothing to say, yeah, you want to sell your products in our country? We'll charge you a little extra. And that money can go into the treasury. Brilliant strategy. But the Kaiser, literally, and I picked this portrait for a reason, literally, the day after he read Mahan's book, he orders his seamstress to make him a naval uniform. He declared himself the head military figure of the German Navy. Gave himself all kinds of great awards, because after all, he's the Kaiser, and called for the creation of German naval strength. Flex the German muscles.
And ultimately, the burden was left on the highest naval figure in the German Reich, Admiral Tirpitz. It's okay if you don't get all of this. I'm not going to make you remember this one for the exam. Very simple. Tirpitz's policy was based on bullyism. Step one, build a strong navy. So strong that it tricks France or Russia into attacking the German navy. Because now you can't allow Germany to have a strong navy. But because the German navy will be so strong, you will decimate whichever one of the two nations attacks you. Well, when that occurs, that's going to terrify England. And they're going to take all of their ships from around the British Isles in the North Sea, and they're going to disperse them all over the globe. So that way they can protect all of their territories for any potential war. Thus essentially making it possible for German ships to leave the North Sea. That would give Germany time to expand. Build more ships, start taking colonies. Well, as German strength begins to grow, and Germany already won a naval war proving its strength, England would just back down. Because you know how much it costs to build a dreadnought?
Millions.
In today's money. Yeah, probably billions. No nation can afford naval battles, which is kind of the irony. You know, back when there were wooden boats, they were probably a couple of tens of thousands of dollars. But when you start building dreadnoughts and battleships and modern cruisers, you lose one of those, you're talking billions of dollars. So essentially, Tirpitz believed that England would be so scared of losing even a single ship, they would allow Germany to do whatever it wanted. And when Germany proved itself to be so strong, England would beg the Kaiser to join the Triple Alliance. All of it was gonna work perfectly. Because you could make brilliant plans that every little step always occurs. Right? Right? Unfortunately, the truth is even sometimes the best laid plans are often laid to waste. Because instead of scaring England into spreading out its fleet, all it did was cause England to start paying attention to what the heck was going on. Wait, whoa, 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 whoa. Now suddenly Germany wants to build a navy? Guess what England starts doing?
Expanding its navy?
Yeah, it doesn't scatter its fleet. It begins building more ships. Why? Because not that you need to remember this. At the time, England was suffering from an inferiority complex. Did any of you ever hear of the Boer Wars? Who were the Boers?
They were Dutch, I believe.
They were Dutch, yeah. And where do they live?
Was modern-day South Africa.
Modern-day South Africa, yeah.
Before that, it was the Zulus.
Well, the Zulus were a tribe that got along with the Boers. More than they got along with the British.
Oh, yeah, of course. Everybody didn't like the British. But
right.
But it was all triggered due to because, like, Britain took over where South Africa is, and then the Boers wanted independence.
Cool.
And then it got out of hand. It was a bush war. The Brits built concentration camps down there, and it was a
It really was, wasn't it? And so for the English, they're sitting back thinking, oh my God, these Boas, these Afrikaners as they were called, Dutch descendants of Dutch colonists, are beating us with primitive guns, no military hardware, no modern artillery. They kicking the living snot out of us.
And before that, the Zulu
basically did the same thing. So England starts saying, well, maybe we're not great. Maybe we can't win wars. To make matters worse, the Boxer Rebellion broke out in China, in which the Chinese fanatical cult began attacking Europeans in the area around Beijing. And most of the people that were butchered happened to be British. And England sits back and say, wait, we didn't see it coming, and there's nothing we can do right away. So they had to put together a nation alliance, And they would end up kicking the snot out of the boxers, but it still took time and high casualties. So England's sitting back saying, wait, if a war breaks out between Russia or France, we're getting our butts kicked by primitive peoples. What happens if we get dragged in? Could we lose our empire? So you know what they did? Using the metric of 19th century racism, which wasn't based on race, but about winning wars, they reached out to the Japanese, who had, in 1898, kicked the living snot out of the Chinese and took possession of much of South Korea. China was the traditional powerhouse of Asia, but the Japanese humiliated them.
Also, they beat the hell out of Russia.
Not yet.
1902. That happened in
1902.
1902.
Oh. Not yet. Now, long story short, this was England's attempt to make an alliance with someone in Asia who could basically react if another Boxer Rebellion erupted. Or if the Russians, who had sent hundreds of thousands of soldiers into Mongolia, and there was nothing the Qing dynasty could do about it. So if the Russians instigated a war, England's plan was to use Japan as the stopgap measure until they could reposition their strength. And the Japanese thought it was great because the Japanese in this treaty viewed themselves as a great power. If the world's mightiest empire wants to be our friend, well, we're doing all right. And they proved it 2 years later. When Russia attempted to seize control of Korea, and the Japanese launched a unilateral unannounced strike in one of the most lopsided military events in the modern era. The Japanese trapped one Russian fleet and literally sunk the entire other navy, the other fleet, because the Kaiser sent the Atlantic fleet steam throwing through the Suez canals when the Pacific fleet was trapped. The Japanese trapped them, used brilliant tactics, sunk almost every single Russian ship. And then on the battlefield, almost every single battle, Japan won through the ferocity of their soldiers. But the problem was Japan was exhausting itself. It could do quick bursts. It could not handle a protracted siege. But the war began to perpetuate. So it wasn't like the 6 weeks war. It wasn't like the Franco-Prussian war that was over in 6 months. This war went from 1904 into 1905, and it looks like it's potentially going to go into 1906. And then somewhere in both Paris and London, British diplomats say, wait, if Japan, who we're allies with, asks us to come and help attack the Russians, who is Russia allies with? The French. It's very likely that there could be yet another in a string of about 35 historical wars that would erupt between England and France. And you know the last thing that either politicians in either country wanted was a war against one another. So at this very point, again, it's just a couple of words, but I'll tell you, historically, in terms of historical significance, this is one of the most unprecedented outcomes that I've ever read about. No one saw this coming. They negotiate what is known as the Entente Cordiale, which loosely translates to gentleman's agreement. Again, 100 years war, 7 years war, the wars of the French Revolution, the war for American independence, war after war after war after war. And now suddenly, they make an agreement. And both nations decide, we don't want to fight one another. So, they don't form a formal treaty, but both nations agree to respect each other's territory. So, France at this time is rolling across North Africa. England's not going to get involved. England is in control of Egypt, the Suez Canal. France is not going to get involved. England has control of India. France has control of what would become Vietnam. Both are dividing up China. But neither is going to saber rattle, use brinkism, or start a fight between each other. The amazing consequence was is when both the Japanese and the Russians learned that their quote-unquote allies were not going to help them, guess what they both wanted to do? End the war. Does anyone know how the Russo-Japanese war ended?
Japanese, technically.
They technically won. But who ended it? Who negotiated the settlement? And where was the settlement negotiated?
It was Russia, and it was in Vladivostok, wasn't it?
No. No. They would get some of Vladivostok, but no. You know who acted as the mediator?
Germany?
No.
America?
America. None other than President Theodore Roosevelt. And I want to reference this point, even though I'm not going to ask it on the test. He got two nations that were hell-bent on destroying each other, that essentially were driving their economies and their military strength into the ground. He got them to sit down, and he negotiated a settlement up in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. And both sides agreed to it. Remember that when I mentioned that TR was a fishing buddy with Kaiser. All right. So, oh, there's the Entente Cordiale. Sorry, I thought I had brought the click up. But there you go. Gentleman's agreement. That's what that's French for. Gentleman's agreement. Questions? Well, now France is sitting back saying, now I'm kind of friends with England, and I'm kind of friends with Russia, but Germany is kind of friends with Austria and Italy. So what happens if I take my friend on one side and see if I can sit him down with my friend on the other and see if I can bring them together? And that was not easy to do because England and Russia hated one another. Which is ironic because the Tsarina at this time, the wife of Nicholas II, was a daughter of Queen Victoria. But nonetheless, they didn't get along so swell. But due to French diplomatic efforts, he literally brought them together. And in 1907, they announced to the world that no longer would England look to interfere in Russian territory or business. Russia would never look to interfere with French business. And then France would never look to interfere in English business. But this is not an alliance. There was no terms like the dual alliance in which a nation was attacked. And in fact, England was adamant on that. In both agreements, they reserved the right to declare neutrality for any reason. And then the French kept going. The French kept going. And how did they do it? Not only did they get England and France to sit down, but to check Germany, France would hammer out an agreement with Japan. Because guess where the Kaiser was looking to build colonies?
Asia.
In Asia. So now if we can be friends with the most powerful navy in the Pacific, we don't have to send our men and our weapons over there. We can let the Japs kill the Krauts. Because look at what the Japs did to the Ruskies. Viva la France! Alright, this is redundant because I talked about that. Talked about that already. And we'll go to here. And we're almost done. I'll let you go a few minutes early. So, France pulls a page out of Bismarck and essentially surrounds the Triple Alliance. Checks them on Europe, checks them in Africa, checks them in Asia. And as a result, France now feels free to start contemplating getting a little bit of payback against Germany for 1871. But here's the catch. Oh, I thought there was a map. Oh, I thought there was a map. I didn't put it on there. So I'll draw you a rough picture and then we'll call it a day. That's not even a board. Damn it. That would have been funny if I wrote on plywood.
There used to be a board over there.
Germany, Austro-Hungary,
Italy.
Very accurate. Definitely, that was an art major, right? France is here. Russia's here. And England is here. Plus, England has a global empire. What can they not do? Even though they're building all this strong navy.
Can't attack France from the sea.
Why?
Because the English Navy.
Yeah.
The French Channel.
One of the terms of the Triple Entente was that, remember Tirpitz's plan? We're going to convince either Russia or France to attack us, and then we'll destroy their navy, and we'll terrify them. Terrify England. But what does England say? No, France, don't worry about it. If Germany attacks your navy, we'll use ours. And guess what they say to Russia?
Same thing.
The same exact thing. So if Germany decides to go this way and attack Russia, the Brits will penetrate the North Sea and they'll start pounding the shores of the German coast. You know who in a million years would never allow this to happen?
Bismarck.
And why did the Kaiser get played? Well, I'll tell you why. Yeah. Hold on. Let's go back. No. There, I got the perfect picture in here, and I didn't reference it. Go back. Oh, there it is. Look at this picture. You can see it. Every single picture that the Kaiser allowed to be taken of him included an optical illusion. Look at the length of his right arm. But notice the left. He always had a glove on the left hand. Because what happens when you look at white as opposed to flesh? Where are your eyes going to go? Your eyes, by nature, are going to go to the color, not the white. So you're not going to focus on this hand, you're going to focus on that hand. And notice, that's a pommel of a sword. All of the pictures were always the same. He had his withered arm, which was just about straight on the pommel of his sword. But notice what happens when I do it. Look at my arm. His arm was like this. This is the biggest reason why all of this stuff played out. Because he was a bully and a dummy. But other than that, I got nothing else to say. Questions? What's due Friday? How are you going to send them to me?
Yeah,
no. Do I need a thesis statement?
Nope.
Cool. Have fun. We'll see you all on Thursday.